Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you, Lord, for this day. God, your blessings, your continual provisions over our lives. And Lord, just thank you for partnership. Thank you for our wonderful friend that we have on today and just the impact that he's making, his organization's making, and Lord, that we just get to partner together. Lord, it's for your kingdom. And we just, again, thank you for the listeners. Lord, pray that they would be blessed and encouraged by this conversation today. In your holy son's precious name we pray. Amen.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to our Community, Our Mission, a podcast of the Topeka Rescue Mission here on Wednesday, April the 10th of 2024, podcast number 217.
Woohoo!
We're keeping on a roll. It's kind of hard to believe. I was only 2 years old when we started this.
I know. And you had hair.
I did. Well, not when I was, not two. Well, maybe when I was two.
We didn't say 2017, Barry.
Okay, let's start this over. Amanda Broyles, Executive Director of Topeka Rescue Mission, Marion Craig. Deputy Director of other stuff. A very special guest here today. But of course, we know that most of you that tune in to our Community, Our Mission do this because you want to know what the special part of today is, right?
Well, so, I know it's special to you. Uh-huh. For some of us, it's painful.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever said it.
What?
Special.
Mm-hmm. I know. Shocking. Shocking.
No, my sheet says, and LaManda, you would go with this one, right? It's National What Day?
Hug your dog day.
Yeah.
We do love our dogs.
Yeah.
Hey, do you know I have a joke?
You have a joke?
Yes.
Oh, no.
I've never heard LaManda Broyles say a joke.
I know. I haven't either. I heard two of them this morning.
Do we have a drum roll, Jeff? Or wah, wah.
No, they're really funny. Okay. One is... Are you ready?
No.
What do you call a dog that can't bark? A hush puppy.
Oh, wow.
That's okay, I have one more.
Our guest is hanging his head saying, why did I come over here today?
What do you call a dog that has a fever? A hot dog.
Oh, gosh.
You got that from your chaplain?
Okay. Yes. No.
Before we started, our guest was talking about a refresh day.
I know.
Right?
Maybe I need one.
I'm thinking maybe.
Okay. Well, just so you know, I also saw those jokes being told by chickens on the internet, and you all know that I love chickens.
I just want you all to know that this is what happens to executive directors of Topeka Rescue Mission after a while.
And, intervention.
Please send in your prayers of support.
You're welcome. Those jokes are free.
Yeah. Well, National Hug Your Dog Day. And whether you hug your dog or not, your dog's going to hug you.
Yes.
If you're kind to your dog. And so that's what happened early with me this morning. Uh-huh. But hugging your dog releases a hormone in both a pup and the person called oxytocin. And so that is good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's, makes you happy.
Makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's informally referred to as the cuddle hormone with your dog. And, the thing I like about my dog, and I'm sure most dogs like this, no matter what kind of day you've had, when you come home, it's like, he's here.
Uh-huh.
It's like, it's fresh start. Forget about where you were. I don't care where you were. You're here now.
Yeah. Right.
And so we start. It's also for some people, and some people enjoy this, it's National Something Else Day. When it has to do with brothers and sisters.
Yeah, sibling day, right?
Yeah. What's a sibling, Miriam?
Well, for me, it's brothers and sisters-in-law because they become
a family.
Yeah, I might actually love them more than my brother sometimes.
It says on this day that sometimes your siblings are your best friends and sometimes your worst enemies. So, I don't know. I'm only a child. So, my parents said, forget, I'm not doing this again. So,
one is enough.
Know about that. It's also, and I don't know how these things work together and who comes up with this stuff. Josh, you probably just make this stuff up, don't you? Is this really?
I do. None of it's real.
You got National Hug Your Dog Day, National Sibling Day, it could kind of go hand in hand, and then National Safety Pin Day. Yeah. Hmm. What's the significance of National Safety Pin Day?
Have you ever needed one and not had one?
Yes.
That's typically when you don't have one.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you know why they would make a day for it.
When our kids were babies, we were very fortunate that they came out with the sticky tape stuff,
Because diapers?
I was afraid I would kill my kid, this is like, and then they had to wash the things afterwards, and that was, So.
And you washed a lot of diapers, did you, Barry?
Not many.
No.
No, I was holding a sign of will work for diapers.
That's right.
But it's definitely a useful invention. I guess I still use them today, right?
Yeah, they do.
Safety Pins Day.
Well, because, if you're environmentally conscious, it's all about creation care, right?
Yeah.
Those diapers last forever. mm-hmm. in the ground. Mm. That's not a good thing, mm-hmm. right? So cloth mm-hmm. diapers.
That's now you tell me.
So appreciate well, see, the safety pin.
When you were doing all that, I really might not have been born yet.
I got a 42-year-old kid, and now you tell me. So anyway, well, we better get into another part of
before
our enjoyment
runs.
Today before he says, oh, I got work to do. So we have a special friend of the Topeka Rescue Mission, the community, personal mm-hmm. friend, been a real game changer coming mm-hmm. to Topeka. And his name is Jonathan Slablet. He came to Topeka. I remember I was on your interview when you came because yeah. we had a thing called Net Reach over in the High Crest neighborhood. And we were looking at handing that ball off to another organization. And at that time, you were working with a fellowship. Bible Church, and they brought you in here to then kind of let you go and let you go do your thing. And so today you currently are the founding pastor and the servant pastor, which we'll say is a lead pastor of Fellowship Highcrest yeah. of a church, and also the founder, current president, and serving as the interim executive director of SENT. So that's a lot of stuff over that neighborhood.
Yeah.
So Jonathan, when did you come? Where'd you come from? And tell us about what SENT and Fellowship Highcrest is doing.
Oh,
and
man.
Welcome.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank y'all guys for having me on. And always, Topeka Rescue Mission is setting the standard for what it looks like to care for those on the margins mm-hmm. in our community, not only here in Topeka, but across the nation. Mm-hmm. And so I am proud to be a citizen and resident of a town with a tremendous partner like y'all guys.
Thank you.
And so I've been here now since... I guess the end of 2017, mm-hmm. I came in, I bought a house without ever stepping foot in it.
Mm-hmm. And was so, that a good thing or bad?
It was a good thing uh-huh. Because I live in the best neighborhood this side of New Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And, so until Jesus come back, I have the prime real estate mm-hmm. on this planet. And so I truly believe that. And so both Fellowship Highcrest and SENT are 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're located in the Highcrest community of Topeka. And so that neighborhood is a traditionally redlined neighborhood.
What's that mean?
So it was one that was discriminated upon through real estate practices mm-hmm. where certain people couldn't live there. If you go back to the original city planning maps for the city of Topeka, 1923, that mm-hmm. you can find at the library, the neighborhood was rated as a D-rated neighborhood because Negroes lived there. It actually says that on the maps.
Does it?
Yeah. Mm. And so... And then in the year 2000, the city of Topeka started doing neighborhood health mapping. And from that point, the Highcrest neighborhood had always been an intensive care neighborhood until two summers ago,
mm-hmm.
where our strategy is working. We mm-hmm. moved from being intensive care to at risk for the first time in history. And the city employee nearly mm-hmm. choked when he said it.
Can't be. Something wrong with the data.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I moved up from Texas. My background, I'm the third kid of a single mom. Mm-hmm. All three different dads, and really some challenging circumstances to my upbringing. I mean, when I got ready to go to college, I had a one-way plane ticket on Southwest to a city I had never visited before because I couldn't afford to go on college tours. Mm-hmm. An employee from the university picked me up at the airport, and I was there. Mm-hmm. I got a chemical engineering degree. Mm-hmm. Part of that came because my sixth grade teacher took me to a basketball game at SMU, and he told me that I was going to get a college scholarship, and I believed him. Mm-hmm. He also took me to his house for dinner, but before he did, he took me by a shotgun house in my neighborhood, and he said that's where I grew up at. And then he took me to dinner at his house, and he lived in a brick home with a yard and a fence, and we ate dinner with his family. And that was the first time, other than the Cosby Show, that I had seen a family eat dinner together. And I said, one day I'm going to be rich, and people say, what does that mean? I said, one day I'm going to have a family and we're going to eat dinner together. So I eat dinner with my family probably 5 to 6 days a week. My team says I have one of the biggest dinner tables they've ever seen because we often have other people mm-hmm. around there. That's because that's what makes me rich mm-hmm. is by having dinner and inviting people to sit at my table. And so we continue that practice. And then when I was in seventh grade, two engineers came to my seventh grade science class where I applied to a magnet or academy within the school district mm-hmm. across town. They bust us across town out of my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they came in, and I had never heard what an engineer did before. I thought engineers ran trains mm-hmm. before that.
Mm-hmm.
And they explained, and I said, that day, I said, I'm going to be an engineer. I decided as a seventh grade student that day I was going to be an engineer. And then on the eighth grade, I was traveling with my grandfather through Louisiana, my dad's father, who passed. I lost both of my parents within a year. My mom just passed on the 30th of December. And my granddad passed a little bit after my dad, actually. But we were on a trip to Plaquemine, Louisiana, where my granddad is from. And that's right across the bridge from Baton Rouge, if any of y'all guys know, southern Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I saw a red diamond on a sign for a chemical plant. And I remember seeing that red diamond on a bowl in my mom's kitchen. And I said, one day I'm going to work for that company. I'm going to make a new plastic. Well, I founded a chapter of the National Society of Black Engineers at the University of Tulsa. There was only, there was less than 10 African-American students in the whole College of Engineering and Natural Sciences. And I roped in some journalism students to be the historian, some business students and finance students to fill the other officers. And I wrote to the only African-American professor at the entire university to be our sponsor. And from that point, I started it. And some companies asked if they could interview me at the national conference that year. And I went. And then I pulled up at the plant in a rental car that they paid for with no money at all. I had $11 in my bank account. So I couldn't even go to the ATM to pull it out. And I realized at that moment that God had brought me back to the very same plant that I passed by as a kid, as an eighth grader, that I was now interviewing with the vice president of operations for that second largest chemical company in the world. I ended up taking a job with them, and I was a chemical engineer for close to 15 years. And before going full-time ministry, I was bivocational most of that time. And then I planted a church there on the coast of Texas, right on the coast of outside of in a little town called Freeport, Lake Jackson area, and worked there before coming here and starting a church.
So with the challenging upbringing that you had, sounds like there was one intersection with this family that really was a game changer for what you wanted to do differently. What else in your life poured into you, and where did God intersect with you in that?
So one of the things is I tell people all the time, it wasn't just one intersection. Sometimes I'm amazed that God would choose a little fat boy from South Oak Cliff to bless him the way that I've been blessed in my life. The difference between my brother and sister and myself, I'm the only one of my mom's kids to graduate high school. And the difference is there were always people outside of my neighborhood, outside of my family, that poured into me more than what they were required to. That starting with teachers all the way at the kindergarten age on up. I can still remember my teachers in early childhood education that taught me the songs they did and the vanilla pudding they served me in cups. They poured into me in a supernatural way. And so it was the people who took in my way out of the neighborhood I was in was my faith in my education. Those are two things that people can never take away from me, no matter what's been done to me over my lifetime. And that was my way out. And that's why I'm such a believer and advocate that I am. It started, I mean, I had people outside my family. A lot of times I was the only person in my household going to church, even though both of my parents are PKs. And the Salvation Army bus would come and pick some of us up. My teacher, who was my basketball coach, would come pick us up on the, he's like, if you're going to come, if you're going to play basketball, you're going to go to church on Sundays. And he would come, he was our public school teacher, and he would come pick us up and he would take us to church with him. I had friends that would take me. I had aunts or uncles sometimes that would take me. Sometimes, depending on where my relationship was with my dad, sometimes I would go with him. But even if I got up on my own as a little kid, I would always go. And people would say early on, they were like, man, you're going to be a preacher. And I was like, no, I'm not. Like, you know, both of my grandfathers and one of my grandmothers are ministers. And I'm like, I want none of that life at all. I'm going to go work for a Fortune 500 company. And my goal is to be CEO.
So understandably why you would say we're going to go the direction we're going to go professionally and people have invested in your life, these people outside of your family and others, which taught you a lot. How did you discover Topeka, Kansas? Or how did they discover you?
man, it discovered me. My wife actually is from Western Kansas, but she was living in Kansas City. We met on eHarmony. And the way we met was the thing that drew me to her was at the time, I was not only planting a church in Southern Texas, but I was taking mission trips every year to both Cambodia and Africa, along with all my business travel to Europe that I was doing. And I was praying and I said, God, I want someone who has a heart for Southeast Asia like I do. And so I was on eHarmony and I saw this profile with Khmer. That's the language they speak in Cambodia on there. And it was my wife's profile. And I was like, I'm going to reach out to her. And she grew up in Western Kansas, but she had lived in China serving in ministry for 3 years. And then she lived in Cambodia for 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And she was back getting her master's. She came back and got her master's where she's a mental health therapist. Mm-hmm. And she had worked in some different homes with transitional homes. And she helped. She was helping to plant a church actually in Kansas City. And working as a therapist with Moxa. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're the organization for sex crimes and sexual abuse and different things of that nature. So she will be one of the people that get called by the hospitals when somebody arrives that had been sexually abused. Mm. She would be one of the ones that arrived and walked the young lady through that. And also she worked with youth who had committed sex crimes and their parents, because that's just part of our heart to say, and we have to walk with them. Mm-hmm. They're not throwaway. There's no throwaways in God's in God's ecosystem. Yes. Sure. And so we met and we dated long distance, and then she moved down to Texas. I thought I was done with Kansas after I had the wedding here.
You got her out of Kansas?
Oh, I got her out. And then and here's the real, right? The church I was planning, there, we were doing great. We were doing all the same things that we're doing in the High Christ community there. Mm-hmm. One of my closest friends in the world was our church financial secretary and treasurer, and he stole all the money from the church. Mm-hmm. And a hurricane hit. This is fresh, not too long after we've been married. And we also had 3 foster kids. We, at that time, we got them when my youngest was 10 months. And they were the youngest 3 of 9. And so I got twins and then a younger son. And so all this was going on. And I get a call from Topeka. Mm-hmm. Now, when all this hits, we end up being at a point where we're going to have to dissolve the church. And I was going back to Tulsa because I have some friends doing the same kind of work that I'm doing here in North Tulsa. And they were a couple of years ahead, but they had tried to hire me several times, but I wouldn't leave Texas. I was like, I hate the cold. I'm not moving back anywhere north, right? I'm like, people come from the beach to come to my church service, right? I'm like, so I'm not moving to cold. Uh-huh. It's not happening. I got seafood. I got fruit. I'm not moving. And
you should have done better by then. You said you weren't going to go in ministry either, but you did.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I made a deal with God when I went to Bible college. That if he would just let me be a deacon and teach Sunday school, that he would leave me alone.
Those deals are always sealed, aren't they? I mean, those are the kiss of death sometimes.
So it's one of those deals. And then I got a call. And I was like, I'm going to Tulsa. I'm like, I'm not going to Kansas. My wife said, you should just listen. And, and then I came up, man, and I saw the green space. And I saw, like, everyone I talked to, I felt like everyone, I called my wife after that first day. I said, babe, everywhere I go, people are just crying. Mm. I was like, I don't know if this is a good thing or if I'm like, everybody's crying as they ask me the vision that I have for this area. But I see so much. And then the last night I was here, they wanted me to teach the youth because they'd already started working with the youth. Mm-hmm. And about 13 of the youth, after I spoke, said they wanted to either stepped across the line of faith that night or wanted to be baptized. And I was like, that coming. And then I went back to the house of the person I was staying with that was hosting me because I believe proximity matters. I wanted to stay in the neighborhood. I didn't want to just talk to church folks when I came here. And that's a part of the story of sin. I said, I want to talk with the people you're partnering with in the community. I don't want to spend time talking with y'all church folk. And there was a knock at the door. I'm getting ready to go to bed, and there was a knock at the door, and there was three young African-American males. And, you know, have you ever been there with somebody, where somebody tries to slip out the door and not let you see who's outside the door? And that's what happened with my host. Mm-hmm. And he was talking with him, and he said, okay, you can come in. And so it was three young African-American teenagers. They were hungry. We had some extra pizza. He let them in to get some food. And while they were there, I just started asking them about their story. Mm. And they started telling me about their story. And I said, hey, have y'all guys ever been to a museum? And they said, yeah. I said, well, I don't know about you, but man, everything in that museum, I didn't think was the hottest thing. Right. And they said, yeah, I seen some things were ugly. I was like, I agree. But you know what? I can't afford a single thing in that museum. And I said, you know why? And they said, no. I said, because the things in that museum are not valued by what I think of them, but by who made them. And I said, you were made by infinite God. And that means you have infinite dignity, value, and worth. And I said, we need you. And I pulled out my card and I said, I don't know if I'm coming here or not. But I said, I'm committed to you. And I said, whenever you decide whatever you want to do, you reach out to me. And I'm going to do everything I can to help you, whether I come here or not. I said, I love you. And I want the best for you. And we need you. You are important. Your story is important. And the young men all broke down and cried. And I shared the gospel with them that night at the table. And after they left, my host said, man, I don't know if they've ever heard another adult male tell them that he loved them. And I went back to my room and I'm sharing all this with my wife. And I'm like, hey, this is what happened. And she said, I thought you said you weren't going to Topeka. I said, I wasn't. But I got to tell my friends that I can't come. And this is the third time that they've offered me a job. And the second time I've accepted it and then backed out. So here I was.
Wow.
Yeah.
So 6 years later.
6 years later. We have both Scent and Fellowship High Crest. And a lot of people wonder, like, why would a pastor ever start something non-religious? Because Scent is a non-religious community development.
You and I had that conversation.
Yeah. And there's a couple of reasons around that. First of all, I want you to know that the work we do in High Crest starts with Scent, but its core is Fellowship High Crest. Right? Because, and here's why. When you look at this thing, God always started on the margins. There's nothing further away from a holy God than creation when it's dark and void and formless. Disorder and chaos and darkness is about the furthest away. And so he always, like, it didn't change who he was to move on the margins and to exist in the margins with creation or people who were always in the margins. And, you know, when I was an engineer, I led people to Christ in every chemical plant I worked in. When I traveled around the world for business, I would hand out Bibles all around. Down in Texas, my friend started nicknaming me John the Baptizer. Because, that was just a part of my nature. And you know what? When I looked at my business card, I never had Christian engineer on my business card. One of the things that hurt us as the church is we feel like we got to put our name on everything. And sometimes it's better if we go unidentified and just love people. When you look at the book of Acts, Acts 19, Christ followers were not recognized as Christ followers until the gospel crossed lines and boundaries. Right? And they went to people on the margins, and the people on the margins said, you remind us of Christ. They didn't have to name themselves. It was the people they loved on and existing with. And that's the deal. And so our work starts with sin because I believe at my core, its core is Fellowship High Crest. Because of my value, because of where I hold scripture, because I believe the gospel is real, because I believe that we're supposed to be a part of this work of reconciliation, that every individual has infinite dignity and value and worth, including the rest of created order, because it was made by a God who is infinitely holy and glorious. And therefore, I can move and exist on the margins. I can be patient. I can be totally comfortable walking beside people who are far away from God and not trying to force and coerce anything, because I still believe in a God who moves through his Holy Spirit, and he has enough power to draw all those toward him, because that's ultimately where this thing ends. It's not some faraway heaven place, but it's when the new heavens meet the new earth, and it's all about things coming together.
Mm-hmm. You like to preach, don't you? So SCENT stands for what?
Strengthening and Equipping Neighborhoods Together.
Okay. So you came in with SCENT to be the practical application of transforming a neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that people weren't tied up with the religious piece of this, but you're still taking biblical principles, the heart of Christ, in through the vehicle of SCENT, and you also have Fellowship Highcrest.
Yes, and another part of this is when I was an engineer, my engineering company will always say this: hey, we will match your giving to a nonprofit organization. And I was like, okay, great. I give a ton of my income to my local church and to other Christian ministries that do the work that y'all always bring in people to talk to us about. They said, well, we can't donate to a religious organization.
Right, you have to have this other vehicle.
And so I'm like, we're smarter than this. Church, we're smarter than this. There's a way around this, right? And we can still do kingdom work and not have to put a title in front of it. Mm-hmm. And so we care about the whole person. That's a part of this creation care y'all was talking about before. It was the diapers and everything else. There's a whole person. There's a whole earth. Mm-hmm. And we have to be concerned about all of it. Mm-hmm. And so with SCENT, you know, we have three major pillars. Mm-hmm. The first one is education, cradle to career. Because even though I have a master's degree, my master's is in Christian education. My wife has a master's degree. We don't believe that college is for everyone. Mm-hmm. But right now in the Highcrest neighborhood, right, within a 10-minute drive radius, only 22% of the kids ages 0 through 4 have any access to early childhood education. Mm-hmm. Now, they say if a kid doesn't learn how to read by the end of the first grade, they'll likely never catch up in their academic career. Mm-hmm. Why does that matter? Because the kids in my neighborhood— right now, they don't have some of the same advantages as their counterparts across town. And all the weight is on the kindergarten and first grade teacher to make sure that they stay caught up, which is insane. Then the average African-American kid right now in Highcrest is slated to have a household income of $19,000 a year at the age of 35. The average Hispanic kid is slated to have a household income of $22,000 to $26,000 a year at the age of 35. That is telling a kid at the age of 6 that you're going to grow up in poverty, your kids are going to grow up in poverty, and likely your grandkids are going to grow up in poverty unless something changes. Guess who the change is going to be? Mm-hmm. We're going to be the change. Mm-hmm. Then we have our business developing and housing pillar. We do a couple things. We help entrepreneurs launch their own businesses. Really is tying people in to existing resources in community. You have the Small Business Development Center, and you have groups like Omni Circle. They do tremendous jobs at that. Yeah. We're not trying to replicate that. All we're trying to do is connect people to those resources.
So you invite them into the space.
Because we love them. And you know what? Because we're present, because most of my church staff live, all my teaching team and most of my staff live in the Highcrest community. Mm-hmm. Proximity matters. People closest to the problem have the best solutions. Mm-hmm. And 66% of my SCENT staff lives in the community. Mm-hmm. I told y'all I live in the best community this side of New Jerusalem. I totally believe that. Mm-hmm. That is not smoke. That is my belief. And so we also, we built the first brand new house in the Highcrest community in over 60 years. Back in 2019, we built Topeka's first net zero house. That's a house that produces as much energy as it uses last year in 2023 and sold it. We have done over 20 housing projects over the last 5 years. We not only build houses, we rehab houses, and we do curb appeal. We invest up to 10 grand into the existing home of homeowners. And then we have a Beat the Heat program where we help people without air conditioner because most of our homes were built for Forest Air Force Base back in the 40s. They don't have central AC. And so we get discount air conditioners into the homes of existing homeowners. So
a lot of those homes don't have any central.
Yes.
And they still have the wall heaters.
Yeah.
And no wall air conditioner.
No wall air conditioner. So we put that in. And then our community health and wellness umbrella. So this is one that has grown. So not only were we a food desert, we were a mental health desert, physical health desert, a transportation desert, affordable housing desert. we were a desert. Early childhood, we were one of the few places in the county that's early childhood education desert. But we were determined to be a sending oasis.
Meaning what?
Meaning we were going to be a spot of hope and light that not only looked at bringing resources, but sending resources. Mm-hmm. Too often in neighborhoods like mine, the Highcrest neighborhood is not only one of the most under-resourced neighborhoods in Kansas, it's one of the most under-resourced neighborhoods in the entire country. Mm-hmm. And so we said,
actually made some national news in that in 2012.
Yeah, we said we're not trying to collect resources. Mm-hmm. We're trying to send solutions and strategies. Mm-hmm. And so we have sent prep around mm-hmm. early childhood education. You heard about our housing. And then so we started in 2020, we started a mental health department mm-hmm. because we saw brought out studies that isolation was causing the same kind of mm-hmm. damage to people as smoking a pack of cigarettes every day. Mm-hmm. Our mental health department gave away last year over $37,000 in mental health resources. Our mental health, we go all the way down to a fee adjusted scale of $5 an hour. And if you make below 50% of the AMI, area median income, we find grant funds for you to get the help.
So does SENT have that as a standalone, or is this other organizations coming in?
No, we have that department. That's internal. We're mm-hmm. also a licensed addiction counseling mm-hmm. facility now. Mm-hmm. Both we do outpatient care, both individual and group. We also have case management. So that's where the game changer is, because one of our core values is a holistic approach. So because of our case management and stuff, when somebody comes and connects with SENT, they get connected with all the resources. And here's where this is going. This is where we're building. Here in August, we're about to bring to Shawnee County in our building trauma-informed occupational therapy. It doesn't exist in Shawnee County or in Douglas County right now. Right now, if you need that source, and I know because people in my family need it, we were driving to Kansas City for, my wife was having to take a full day off of work every week to drive our kids to Kansas City for that. It's going to be in the building. Caritas Clinics is looking at partnering with us to come into the building to do dental and medical in the building. Mm. Wonderfully Made Pediatrics is looking at doing holistic care and helping people, because not only do we have our SENT market that works on the development side of food insecurity, but we're getting ready to start the Southside Filling Station Food Pantry here in August. And so we're steadily looking for partners around that. Impact Avenues is moving their Impact Days to Avondale East to use both SENT and Fellowship Highcrest space. And phase two of that looks at, will we look at moving the case management stuff there? We're deepening our partnership with Mirror. We already partnered with Mirror, but there's some things we offer that they don't, and some things they offer that we don't. And so we have been steady deepening that mm-hmm. That partnership. We're working with DCF on a deeper relationship now. And so working with that, steady partnering with them. We have in our building through the church, we have our free community party room for families to gather so they won't be isolated. You don't have to pay us anything. You put down a deposit. If nothing's broken, you get that back. But you get a team of volunteers. You get a cotton candy machine, snow cone machine, popcorn machine, all the audio video equipment. You have a space. They help you decorate the space. You show up with cupcakes or a cake, and you have a birthday party, graduation party, funeral repast, whatever you want in that space. We have a fully functioning audio video podcast studio, because remember those economics that I told you about household incomes? Well, there's 68,000 jobs in the state of Kansas that you have to have tech training for. And so we are able to give people all the behind the scenes stuff for that. And nonprofits and small businesses can come in, shoot their podcasts or their commercials in that space. We are expanding different things in the building. We're trying to hire another mental health therapist right now to expand services, because we're doing some of the groups like our Making Sense of Your Worth group. People are coming out of that group and recruiting their friends for the group because of the phenomenal results we're seeing. We're helping to train our schools and other organizations with TBRI, because we have licensed practitioners that can go and train those things. And so when you look at all the things that are in the building now, you look at Community Action is in the building, right? And they do all their things. You look at CRC Care Center and Mary Thomas and her team do a mm-hmm. tremendous job with tax help and utility help. The things that people have been in meetings saying they wanted to build is one-stop shop. We've been solidly building there mm-hmm. with our housing, with our early childhood education, with all those different things now being in the building. And we've just been solidly doing it and saying, we're just going to do the work. We just found out recently that our small church, we average, before COVID, we were around 350. average. Now we're around 172 average. Our small church just got nominated as one of the three finalists for the CarePortal Urban Church of the Year.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think that it's all sin. But remember, I said the work starts with sin, but its core is Fellowship High Crest.
Church.
And the church is doing the work. 2 years ago, what the church won the Shawnee County Health Department's Organization of the Year because of our investments in community health. And what I want to, I just want people to understand that, man, you can be a believer and you can do work with non-Christian organizations and partner well. And through those relationships, I can't tell you how many people I've been able to share the gospel with and see step over the line of faith and baptize their families because of what we started at. And it
singing the same sheet of music at TRM as well to do that. You know, you serve. And you don't come in with your Jesus on the front end, but your Jesus is with you on all ends. But it's not a religious effort. It is taking the values that Christ taught us to be able to love our neighbors.
Yeah.
So some amazing things have happened in 6 years. What's your biggest challenge that you are still trying to overcome in High Crest?
The biggest challenge is some of the models that we brought in have been different, right? And here's my deal. We need different models. I drive a Nissan Titan. And I have friends that drive Chevys. You know what? We still go on day nights together, and we're all right. And here's the deal we got to get across to people. If you have a religious community development nonprofit, keep going. If you do all your outreach through your church, keep going. If you're a multi-site or different things of that nature, keep going. There's not one way of doing this work. But sometimes when you come in with different methods and different ways, people take that as an affront rather than saying, how can we partner well? And so that's one of the deals. And then it's I think that the community is seeing the progress that's happening. And our deal is we're trying to work ourselves out of a job in High Crest. We're trying to get the neighborhood to tell us you can leave. That's our biggest goal. But we need, there's some upfront things. So for instance, Barry, the first house we built in High Crest, right? We paid $154,000 to build that house. Okay. We sold it for $110,000. We have 20 acres of land in the High Crest community that we want to develop. We call the Fremont Hill Project. And when we went to get an appraisal on that land so that we can use the capital and the resources of that land as security to go do some other work, the appraisal valued that land at the same amount as a 1,200 square foot house that we built 2 years prior to buying that land. And just seeing like, man, there's some, if we just had the right amount of help, there could be tremendous turnover because of my engineering background and project management, and that's what I did. I did project management stuff, right, toward the end of my engineering career. We are doing things that are not only heart healthy, but financially and fiscally wise. And so with just a little bit of help, we could go over it.
So there used to be a day when many people in the community that didn't live there didn't know where High Crest was. There was a meeting that I was in over at this Great Overland Station. About 80 pretty well-known community leaders were there. And I asked them the question, how many of you know where High Crest is? Out of 80, about 20 hands went up. That's changed dramatically over the years. So, but it's still High Crest. It's still up on the hill. It's still over there. You've done a tremendous job of trying to put High Crest more on the map than it ever was before, because a lot of people didn't even know, didn't care. Why should people care about the health of High Crest?
People should care because the people of High Crest are people. And what I found is that the people of High Crest were doing great things before I ever got there. Man, I didn't create the wave. I'm riding the wave that people like you and your team that was there with NetReach, even before all of us, the African-American churches that existed in that community in Southeast Topeka, all the people, man, Southern Hills, all the people that were doing all this work for years before, I'm coming in. It's the old principle of some people plant seed, some people water, and some people see.
That's right.
And I'm coming in, and I'm just yielding fruit. And I'm trying to, I tell that story all the time that you just told to people saying, we didn't start this work. Mm-hmm. We're continuing this work. We were handed the baton. Mm-hmm. And people should care because people live there, and that's a part of God's creation. And I believe that sometimes we don't see the impact we want to see because we try to water down the aid. And right now, in 2020, they did a housing survey for the city. And they said, we have a 25,000 house shortage. Mm-hmm. And we need to invest $53 million a year for 10 years to see the impact that we want to see and close this gap. But the city of Topeka at that time was only spending $5.3 million per year on housing. I like numbers. and I said, man, if you take that $5.3 million a year and you spread it out all across the city, you're never going to close the gap. You got to decide on a starting place. And you got to make a difference. Mm-hmm. If you even ascribe to Dave Ramsey, which I'm going to be honest, I'm not a big fan of Dave Ramsey. There's some things I like about Dave Ramsey, but I'm not a, because he doesn't deal well with generational poverty. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't. Mm-hmm. And, but even he, in his snowball method, says this. You start with the bill that's closest to be paid off. Mm-hmm. You pay that mm-hmm. off and then take that money and roll it up to the next. I was picked a couple of years ago as one of the inaugural members of the Kansas Future Fellows. The governor and the Kansas Children's Cabinet picked 11 of us from around the state to develop solutions for families all over Kansas for the next 75 to 100 years. My whole premise was to develop systems and strategies where the everyday person could transform their neighborhoods without needing Superman. I'm trying to eliminate all the red, the intensive care, and at-risk neighborhoods from the city of Topeka's neighborhood health map over the next 20 to 25 years. Now, I can't do that alone, but I feel like God has gifted me, and that's why I went through all that engineering training and Six Sigma training and got certified in black belt stuff and all that kind of thing, is to come up with systems and strategies that I can then hand out for free for people to go repeat this work in their own neighborhood.
So, Highcrest, one of these days says, hey, thanks very much, Jonathan. You can go somewhere else now, which you had mentioned. That's your goal. Say, we don't need you anymore. Where would you go next?
Wherever God sends. Mm-hmm. I've always lived with a good suitcase.
But you love your neighborhood, and this is a long game. It didn't get where it was when we stepped in there around 2012 overnight. It happened over generations. Does it take generations to change?
No, I'm going to tell you why. So last year, the city of Topeka, 2023, had a record high murders. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the last time they had a record high murders before that?
Got a good guess on it.
2018, mm-hmm. when we started. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Highcrest was one of the most violent neighborhoods in the city. I mean, when I first moved here, my coworkers then said, man, we're concerned, because I said, I have to live in a neighborhood if I'm coming. Mm-hmm. I have to live in a neighborhood. That's one of my conditions for coming. If I can't do that, I'm not coming. Because the shepherd stays with the sheep. Okay? And we were having somebody die in the neighborhood every 2 to 3 days, it felt like. And I said, man, that's enough is enough of this. We even got shirts made. We put Steps to Nonviolent Protest on the back. It was crazy. Last year, when we had record high murders, you know how many murders happened in Highcrest?
Not very many.
One.
Hmm. Why is that?
Clemson University did a study that shows a 1% increase in food insecurity can lead to a 15% mm-hmm. increase in violent mm-hmm. crime. Mm-hmm. Our holistic approach is working. I don't have to shout this. I'm just going to keep doing the work. Mm-hmm. And one day somebody's going to come and observe, and hopefully some of your partners that listen to this will come and want to invest, and we can go ahead and really get this thing rocking. Mm-hmm. Our strategy is working.
What does rocking look like to you?
Rocking is one.
Sounds like it's rocking now. So.
So here's the deal. When we first started, Girard used to be one of the most feared streets mm-hmm. in the whole city. Mm-hmm. Where do we start doing most of our housing projects at?
Girard.
Yeah. Right now, Pinecrest is the city, is the street in our neighborhood with the most property violations. We have a whole plan for one to transform the whole street. We sold a house on Girard last year. I mean, on Pinecrest last year, mm-hmm. rehabbed it. And so my deal is where... So I've been places before where really high. I remember I was at an airport and one of the U.S. president at the time was landing, and everybody ran to the windows, and I kind of stayed sitting in my seat, kind of like what I did with the eclipse yesterday. I didn't look up one time, and I just didn't care. But I got to spend a whole day with Dr. John Perkins. He's pretty much the father of community development. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I kind of geeked out with that, right? And he said, Jonathan, here's the reason why you need some real estate developers on your team. He said, pastors get excited about one house, but you don't truly change a neighborhood until you start to see 100 houses change. Mm-hmm. See, our whole goal, even with housing, is to change 15% of the existing homes that existed in Highcrest when we began. That's 315 of the 2,030 homes that existed. Because if you look at classical movements, if you get about that amount, it tips the triangle. Only 10% of the country marched with Dr. King. Mm-hmm. I don't need 100% to move in order to make a shift. Mm-hmm. I can do a small amount, and it'll start to snowball the road.
We could ask tons of questions here, but maybe one last question. How will you know that you have achieved what you believe is the assignment that God has given you for Highcrest? How will you know that that neighborhood, one of the greatest deed and care neighborhoods in the community, is the first one that maybe can be modeled in other neighborhoods?
I won't. A lot of people think, a lot of people's favorite MLK speech is that I have a dream speech, but that's not mine. My favorite MLK speech is the I've been to the mountaintop speech, followed by his letter from a Birmingham jail. On the I've been to the mountaintop speech is the sermon he preached the night before he died. Mm-hmm. And he drew upon Moses getting to go and see into the promised land, but not being able to enter with him. Mm-hmm. And the work I'm doing right now, I realize that I, in all likelihood, I won't experience the fruit of.
You're okay with that?
I'm okay with that, because I know where my reward is. Mm-hmm. But here's what we've built. Almost every year we've been in existence, we've had someone from either Sin or Fellowship Highcrest be nominated into Top 20 Under 40 or Leadership Greater Topeka. Every year we spend resources to help those in our communities get their resumes professionally done, to help get professional help on their applications for those programs, and to help them get nominated into those programs because we're building leaders. This is about more than me. I only preach right now one out of three Sundays, or one every other Sunday, about two Sundays a month, because it's not about me. I've lessened and shortened my sermon time. I think I preached maybe 15, maybe 20 minutes on Easter. Because it's not about me. I am trying to decentralize myself as much as possible where I'm not needed. Mm. And if I can get to that point where the beer truck hits me and I die and everything continues going, then I've lived out my mission here. But I won't find that out till I'm in glory looking back on the other side and saying, and cheering those who are left on to continue to work.
Yeah, that's well said. Jonathan, normally I have LaManda and Miriam jump in here, but there's been so much that you have been able to offer here today. LaManda, Miriam, any questions for Jonathan?
I don't have any questions. I just want to make sure that you know how much we appreciated you all stepping forward during the cold spell, right? There was only barely a handful, that stepped forward the way you all did to help folks, to help save people's lives. And that meant so much to us because it was really important work. So I just want to say thank you so much that you all were willing to do that when it was nuts. It was just nuts.
Thank you all for the opportunity and that you would trust us enough to be invited into that, just to use our resources. We want to use everything to be multi-purpose in our building, in our space, which we don't have our own building in our space except for the fire extinguisher. And so if I can get around not building buildings, I will, and keep using spaces, but it's to be used. That's the problem with most churches have about 20% asset utilization. Mm-hmm. In the engineering world, I could never get a capital project approved that had 20% asset utilization. And so I want our space to be about 80% asset utilization, giving us time for maintenance and cleaning. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. LaManda.
You know, I think no questions. I think I just want to show appreciation for a couple of things. Ditto to what Miriam said about the warming center. You know, a lot of people can say things, and then you can slash that amount by 80% of people that do it. And y'all are doers. And so I am thankful for that. I also think that there's so much that aligns in what we do. And the main thing is that we are doing this for the kingdom. It isn't about us. It isn't even just about what we can do on earth. It's about that we're trying to do things on earth that make a difference in the lives in eternity. And I just love that. And then lastly, you know, I think one of the things that I appreciate about Jonathan is we've been in a couple of meetings together where he has vocalized helpers helping the helpers. And that's been something that's on my heart for about a year and a half now is so often it's easy for us to quote unquote talk about the marginalized. Well, is that true? Yes. And we saw Jesus do it all the time. But a lot of times there are people that are considered marginalized that cover it up because they aren't deemed marginalized. And that's really on my heart right now is to really look at the people sitting to your left and your right in that Sunday school class. Look at the people that are in those governmental meetings. Look at people that are the CEOs, those kinds of things. So often we've deemed those normalized, and I hate that word, but normalized society-wise. But they are the people that are hurting the most. And there are more connections and similarities between whether we're talking about the quote unquote marginalized in Highcrest, whether we're talking about people experiencing homelessness all over the city, and pastors and educated and fill in the blank. We're more connected and similar than not. And the bottom line is we're all broken. We've all got weaknesses. We can talk about all the great things that he's doing, that I'm doing, that the teams are doing. But the bottom line is the reason any of this flourishes is because we are realistic with what we're weak in. And we're taking our own weaknesses and brokenness and talking about them, whether that's our past, our present. It doesn't have to be our future. And I love that about him because he is all about helping anyone that's in front of him, regardless if it's his neighborhood, regardless if it's this person. And I love that. I feel like that that's kind of one thing that we're united with is we need to all be looking at each other and realizing all of ourselves, including our own, need help in some way, whether that's food help or therapy help or healing or sometimes correction. We all need that. And I appreciate how he vocalizes that helpers should be helping helpers.
Yeah. And a couple of things. I have a tattoo on my wrist. On the top side is the word tetelestai. And so it's it is finished. It's Christ's last work on the cross. On the other side is a semicolon. Because at one point I did consider taking my own life. Right now I'm in one of sense. I'm in the Making Sense of Your Worth group. There's 14 guys in that in this initial round of that group. Of 33% of us are African American, from ages early 20s all the way through 80s. Different economic backgrounds, everything else. The guy leading it said, I've never been in a diverse group like this. We have a social emotional learning team at the church. So even when you get ready to volunteer, the first thing we do is have you go just have some time with a therapist to see if this is the right time for you to serve. Is this the healthy move for you? And then how can we be good leaders and set, help set good boundaries so that you don't burn out? We're bringing in therapists just to spend time with our teachers at St. Prep every month with them just digest life. They also get access to all of our case management services. I'm not building things for other folks. I'm building things for the whole person, including me, because I need all those same tools and different things in my life. I need to help parenting my kids and helping the schools and help with my house.
You guys doing life together.
Yeah. We're doing life together.
Yeah, you might have professional expert clergy. You may have social workers. You may have psychologists. You may have all these things, but we're still doing life together.
We're still doing life together.
Yeah. Jonathan, this has really been a good time with you today. I know we haven't had a chance to catch up for a while. I appreciate the deep dive that you've taken, not just going wide but deep, and wides later as God provides. Yeah. And also, you know, for TRM and all the people who had come before, and you mentioned some of those different churches and all of that, you know, to plant some seeds, and then hearing God clearly say, time to hand the ball off, and to see that we hand it off with the right guy that's going to carry it and the right methods. And there'll be a day where you'll do the same. But you will invest as people have always invested before us, and we build upon those things to see what you've done and to know that it really is making a difference in a place of our community, which I lived there at one time over in Highcrest on Fremont. So I understand. I'm an alumni. This is what some people over there told me. And it's a part of who we are. And as part of this community, there should never be a neighborhood or a person in a community that nobody knows about. Mm-hmm. And that's an unhealthy community. And what you're doing is taking it more forward to help people that live there, including yourself, to know they matter, and helping a community know they matter too.
As my friend Jonathan Brooks at Ministries in Chicago says, there are no God-forsaken neighborhoods. There are only church-forsaken neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love your balance with what Scent's doing and what the church is doing, and not saying it's this or that. No. It is all of that. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan Sublette, who is the founder president of Scent and also Scent Prep now, also pastor of Fellowship Highcrest, thank you for being on our Community, Our Mission.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening to our Community, Our Mission. If you would like more information about Topeka Rescue Mission, you can go to trmonline.org. That's trmonline.org. And this is going to be on Facebook. And also, I think Josh will put a link up to Scent on there as well. So thank you again for listening to Our Community, Our Mission.